Vice did a fascinating story about some young folks that were excited to work at one of the first legal weed dispensaries in Toronto. And they shared how it just wasn't a great experience. I would imagine many of these dispensaries, stores, whatever we want to call them now, they're run by people that maybe have a great deal of experience, other people that maybe don't. They're run by good managers and bad managers. But it seems that they had a lot of crazy issues that are probably not the norm in the day-to-day business environment. And these young employees are not happy, and they've gone to Vice. They've told their story about how things went down at the Honey Pot Cannabis Company and how basically they all just decided to quit at the same time. I want to pick through some of their complaints and find out where they actually sit legally. Joining us now on the night side is employment lawyer Howard Levitt from Levitt LLP. Howard, good evening.
Good evening.
So one of the things that these young guys complained about was they had a problem with sewage water in the basement. There was a flood. So now there is a sewage on the floor, and they're asked to help clean it up. They're worried about being contaminated. They, of course, have to go downstairs and walk through the dirty, crappy water to clock in and clock out. And, of course, they allege that the owner said, oh, well, you can buy some of the water-damaged containers of cannabis for a discount, which, of course, they're like, wait a minute, that's near sewage. That's not good for us. So I would imagine from time to time in a business, an emergency like this happens. There is some sort of environment that's very different than the norm. It's an emergency of some sort. What is the legal responsibility of the staff to participate in cleaning something up like that?
If it's genuinely a health issue, then they can refuse to do it, and the company then has to call an occupational health and safety inspector who tells them whether it genuinely is dangerous or whether they have to do it or not. If they then say do it, they have to do it or they'll be fired for cause. But they don't have to do it until then. And sometimes bogus complaints are phoned in, but they still, if there's any ostensible argument that there might be danger, they have a right to refuse to work.
So in the case of, like in this case, I would imagine it's a pipe broke or something, it's flooding, everyone's probably panically going, like, Lord, this problem needs to be solved immediately. They don't have time for a grievance or calling anybody. And if they, I would imagine most employers, if someone said, well, I'm not doing it, most would probably be reasonable and go, okay, I understand, but I got to solve this problem right now. Maybe we'll deal with it later. But there would probably be some that would just be outraged that, hey, you're not a team player, and probably look badly upon that employee.
Well, that's true. And if they do that and they discipline them in any way, they're in deep trouble if we're talking about a safety issue, even if it's ultimately found not to be dangerous. So that's an area where the government's given tremendous protection to employees.
So if there's ever a situation where it could even remotely be involved in some sort of health or safety, it's better just to call the pros and deal with it.
Well, look, the reality is this. An employee who refuses to help isn't going to get the next promotion, isn't going to get the next discretionary increase. So employees should obviously watch what battles they want to pick. But do they have a technical right to refuse? Yes.
Now, one of the other young ladies, she said she started working there as a receptionist, and she was making $14 an hour. And then she got switched to being a bud tender, which I think is a clever, funny name for a salesperson. And she said she would be making $17 an hour, which is the standard for a bud tender. But months after she checked her pay stub, she noticed she was still getting paid $14 an hour, and they had only paid her $17 on one check and then switched her back to the lower salary. That has to be a colossal no-no.
Well, sure. It's a constructive dismissal. It's a claim for unpaid wages. There's lots of recourse. The problem is people like that who make so little to begin with, I've been going to the Minister of Labor, which could take months and months and months. There's no effective recourse at the end of the day. So they could claim constructive dismissal, but what's a wrongful dismissal case worth if you make $17 an hour and you've been there for 3 months? Essentially nothing at all to speak of, not worth the energy to make the complaint. And these people are indigent to begin with. They have very little in the way of income. They could barely afford rent. If they can afford rent, they're probably more likely living with their parents. So precarious employment for people like that.
Mm-hmm. And what is the, is there any sort of legal ramifications? Like, I guess you wait for the government to come in and basically fine an employee that doesn't pay people properly?
Yeah, in order to pay your wages. And it's, but that's about it. And if they then fire you for filing an employment standards complaint, there's a retaliatory provision, and that would, of course, be the jackpot for these employees, and they get extra money because the employer retaliated against them. That's actually the best thing they could hope for.
So when we're talking about, this pops into my mind, Howard, and I'm sure you get asked this question frequently. When we talk about these companies that are screwing up paychecks, whether it's honestly or dishonestly, and then we look over to Ottawa and we hear about this crazy Enix pay system that we have federal government employees that aren't being paid properly, at some point, is there a massive lawsuit that takes place?
Well, there could be, but again, when there's so little money at stake, no lawyer is going to take it, even on a class action basis. That is the problem.
Why would there be so little money at stake with the federal government? Wouldn't that be like
no,
a cash
cow? No, not with
cow?
The federal government, but with okay. cases like the one we're talking about today.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Certainly, if people are losing money and they're civil servants and each of them cumulatively make a decent living, lawyers are salivating for that type of class action lawsuit.
And do you think one will come up with the Phoenix pay system in Ottawa? Or do you think they'll...
I don't know enough about it. I suspect what I hear, and I really just hear it in the press like you do, that they're not being paid the pay on time, but then the government's making up for it the next time. So there's no actual damage other than deferred compensation, which is all the court would give them anyway. Interest on the money, it's just not worth very much. So to that extent, that would be a really insignificant lawsuit.
Howard Levitt is with us, employment lawyer at Levitt LLP. One more quick thing before we let you go. Of course, today it was announced that Foodora can actually create a union. These are folks that traditionally we've been selling it, or it's been sold to everyone that it's a side hustle. It's something you do part-time to make a few extra bucks. Now some people have turned it into a real job, and the government saying, okay, well, now you can form a union. Does a union, I guess getting people paid better is not a bad thing, but it might completely ruin that whole business model, because I don't know how much people are willing to pay more to get food delivered to their home.
Well, that's a fact. And, of course, we used to have pizza delivery from those pizza companies and various delivery from those particular companies. It might go back to the point that the company, the various restaurateurs will start using their own employees once again to delivery. Because if they unionize and if they call a strike and people begin finding that they're unreliable, first of all, the businesses themselves may go to business. But even if they don't, consumers will vote with their pocketbooks and their phone calls and will stop using Foodora.
Yeah. One more question.
It's going to be very hard, by the way, to organize all of these dependent contractors when there's no any real record of them and they have no real stake in the business and they may be concerned about being terminated, even though legally they can't be. I'm not sure how engaged they are. Also, they're probably not that dependent on that employer for any real length of time. There's no long-term stake, so they might just not want to get involved.
One more quick question. We're kind of bouncing all over, but there's a variety of things going on in the news. With the coronavirus, one of our texters, his wife is a flight attendant, and she can't refuse to go on a flight, even though some of them are going to places where there is rumor of the coronavirus. What's your advice in that situation?
Well, you're quite right. They can't refuse to go. So if they're going, if they're flying into Wuhan, for example, that might be a case where they might have a legitimate right, or the union might, because they're all unionized, might be able to successfully take the case. But if they're flying, where I'm in Vancouver, in the airport right now as we're speaking, if they're flying to Vancouver and they refuse to take the case, they don't want to be around a lot of people at once, then they're going to lose their job.
All right.
Because at the end of the day, the statistical probability of attracting the coronavirus on any one flight to most places in the world is so minuscule as to be irrelevant. There's a lot of over hysteria.
For sure. Yeah, I guess it's like the lottery at that point. So the odds are not necessarily in your favor. Howard Levitt.
I just asked me, want to buy travel insurance to fly to Florida because the health care facilities there are getting ready to deal with the coronavirus, yet there's not been a single case in Florida.
So yeah.
There's no real reason to buy travel insurance at that point, or health insurance for when you're in Florida, at least not because of the coronavirus.
Makes sense. Howard Levitt, employment lawyer at Levitt LLP. Howard, appreciate your time as always.
Good talking. Thank you.
Likewise.